Welcome, welcome, welcome. This is episode 290 of the Distraction Pieces podcast. And I'm joined today by someone I was delighted to chat to. He's a wrestler. But if you're not a wrestling fan, then don't go turning away, because I think you're going to love this one. Before I get into it, I'm joined by Jack Sexsmith. But before I get into it, huge love for the response to the recent episodes. The Louis Theroux episode, the Kano episode, the Frank Turner episode, the Sarah Pascoe episode, the Joe Gilgan episode. They've all been some of the most popular response-wise episodes I've done. So big love for that. But yeah, so Jack and I sat down and we ended up talking for 2 hours. So you know it's a good one when it goes on long. So with that, I've split it into two. The first part out now. And the second part will be out at midday. So I'll tell you a bit about the first part. I'll keep this intro brief, and then I'll probably keep the outro brief, then do the second. I don't know. We will figure it out. But in this half, we talk about essentially Jack's life and his history and the kind of first half of his career. I mean, we start with, sadly, the end of his career. Jack recently sustained an injury that has meant he's had to stop doing what he's put years and years into and got to a really good place in. So yeah, it's a really interesting one for that. But we also talk about the importance, the reason, as a lot of you know, I don't generally have wrestlers on anymore because of Tuesday Night Jaw. I don't have many wrestlers on because Tuesday Night Jaw is a wrestling podcast on the network, and I think that's the perfect place for wrestlers. But Jack's story for me transcends wrestling because it's what he's done for the LGBTQ community and the work he's done there within wrestling, which, as we'll get on to in part two, isn't always traditionally an LGBTQ friendly arena as such. So I really think the stuff he's done there is important. And then, yeah, as said, we talk about his injury and how he's had to deal with that and how that's impacted him. So, yeah, the first half is a hell of a chat. I won't ramble on too much. As said, it's a two-parter. If this is your first time tuning in, previous wrestling guests include Eddie Dennis, Chris Jericho, Jim Smallman, Jack Gallagher, Will Ospreay. So there's some good previous wrestling guests in there. Well worth a look into the back catalogue. And as I said, if it's your first time here and you're a wrestling fan, go and have a look at Tuesday Night Jaw. It's a wonderful wrestling podcast on the network. Couldn't be prouder to have it on there. I'll leave it there. As you might hear, my voice is about to give away. I've been in bed ill for 2 days, so I'm recording this intro as last minute as I can and trying to get enough of my voice. But I'm losing it already. So, yeah, the usual things, speechdevelopmentrecords.com is where you can buy merch, and patreon.com/scroobiouspip is where you can pledge $1 a month. Anyway, forget all that. Let's hear part one of the Distraction Piece, episode 290, with Jack Sexsmith. Right, I'm going to take my headphones off, I think, and just chat away. So I'm joined today by Jack Sexsmith. That's how I've always known you, so I assume that's how I'm going to...
That is fine by me,
refer
sir.
...refer to you.
That is fine by me.
It's an interesting one with wrestlers, and it's weird because every industry I've ever been in or involved in seems to have it that half my musician mates aren't going by their real name.
Right.
All my wrestling mates aren't going by their real name. My partner, a lot of the models and sex industry all have fake names. Yeah. It's like, I'm always on the side of, I don't want to know your real name. I've known you as Jack Sexsmith. I'll go with that. Yet my partner will every now and then will be, I was talking to whoever, and I'll be like,
yeah. Yeah, right? No, it's a
convoluted Dahlia Black.
One.
I was like, oh, Dahlia. Oh, I know yeah, Dahlia. Yeah, yeah, I don't know who you're talking about otherwise, but yeah, it's a complex industry.
Mm.
So, I mean, we're here to have a big old chat, and I kind of, when I was planning it last night, I figured the best place to start is at the end as such, because it's why this has come about.
Fair.
And then I want to go through everything and then look at the future and stuff like that. So I was at a Riptide show recently, and you had to make a fucking heartbreaking announcement. And it was after that I kind of messaged you saying, look, if you want to come on a chat at any point, when you're ready, there's no rush. So do you want to kind of explain what's happened there?
Yeah, it was a tough one. It was an incident at a show in Newcastle called Defiant that I'd recently sort of gotten into. And I just landed...
I don't know if I've mentioned that you're a wrestler. Jess, I should mention that to make that clear at the start. Anyway, continue.
Yes. You hinted at it with the aliases
thing. Yeah.
Yeah, and I just did a move I've done 1,000 times before, sliced bread. And I landed it pretty normally. I don't think there's too much off of it. I just felt a pop.
Right.
And thankfully, that was the end of the match. So I managed to get back to the locker room and sort of ice it briefly. But something I knew was up because I had to do a match later on that evening.
Yeah.
Which was just, there's only a small part in a Royal Rumble type match.
Yeah.
And as I went to tighten up my laces, I realised I couldn't really bend down.
Right.
And went... Nah, there is something dodged there. So, yeah. And I knew I was supposed to be working the next day, and I think I realised then, okay, I'm going to do this Rumble match, and then I'll have to speak with that guy because I don't think I'm going to be able to do this one.
Yeah.
And then upon exiting the ring, being thrown out over the top rope of that Rumble match, I think I landed off again and just didn't feel so much of a pop that time, but knew that I'd tweak something. I'd fallen unnaturally that time.
Yeah. Was it already compromised?
Yeah, so I knew something was up, but I didn't quite realise the extent of it. So before I'd even really started wrestling, I'd had my ACL in my left knee replaced.
Right.
So that was a complete tear. Went in for the surgery. They cut out your hamstring. They fold it round a few times and then put a bolt at the top of your leg, bolt at the bottom of your leg, and your hamstring's your new ACL.
Oh, wow.
So maybe part of me always knew I was kind of on borrowed time with the wrestling.
Yeah.
Maybe part of me did.
It's tough, isn't it? Because you can always, in those situations, you'll always get the stories of, oh, no, it's stronger than ever now. I've had this done, it's stronger than ever.
Yeah.
But again, there's always going to be that slight, if it's happened once, not that it's a weakness in you or whatever, but it's something that you're susceptible to. So it's always going to be that slight fear.
Yeah,
and slight.
I think... The example I remember the surgeon gave me was like, I said, do you reckon I'll ever be able to do sports at a decent level again? And he said, do you remember the footballer Robert Pires? He had the same thing that you did.
Right.
And before the surgery, he was one of the best players in the Premiership. And after surgery, he just wasn't quite the same.
Right.
And that's kind of what it is you just don't move quite as smoothly as you would have done before.
Yeah.
And I think you could tell that from my arsenal as a professional wrestler that I never really explored the fancy.
or that was one of the beautiful thing. Again, I think everything, restrictions can be a massive blessing to creativity and to pushing boundaries and stuff like that. And I think if you did feel, even incorrectly, if you feel you had restrictions physically, it pushed you to more than make up for it in so many other areas of what is a professional wrestler.
I'm liable to agree with that. I think I think the slots I had on shows at the time were very much either comedy centric,
yeah,
or were just not making up numbers on a card because everybody's there for merit. Everybody's there on merit, but we're not designed to be the explosive all action affairs.
Yeah,
so that sort of suited me in trying to find something else that I could really connect with an audience with.
Yeah.
Anyway, so I cancelled that show that I had on a Sunday and I realised something was wrong. I had to stay in a hotel that night and I woke up in the morning, my leg was like treble the size. My knee was treble the size. I was like, okay, yeah, there's definitely something here.
Yeah.
So
It must be tough, right? Because you get bumps all the time. You're constantly injured.
You're working hurt all the time. The difference between hurt and injury is very, very different things in wrestling.
So particularly when you're more experienced, there must be a... a tough one to go, right, am I actually hurt or am I, I'm hurt, but am I hurt?
It was like, well, this one hurts, but can I still do my matches?
Yeah, yeah.
Just say, beat up the other knee or something, you know what I mean? It was always easy enough to overcome. Like, I'd wrestled matches with a torn bicep.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've wrestled with, when I've torn the cartilage in my knee a little bit, I've just been like, okay, I need to get over that pain.
Adrenaline's a hell of a drug.
Yeah, but you love the game.
Yeah.
You love the show. So you're willing to, you know you're going to hurt in the morning.
Yeah.
But it's all worth it for that.
Yeah, completely.
Because the fan, you'll go out after the show and a fan will get you a drink and that's your painkiller anyway, so.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure we'll talk about it later, but that sentence alone tells me that you were trained by Jimmy Havoc. That's kind of
everything I knew, man. Jimmy's
comments, like, yeah. But anyway, we'll get to all that later. See, you woke up and your leg was not right.
So I knew like from the pain I'd had before with the ACL going all them years before, I thought this might be something actually a little bit similar. So this was the first time I really got a bit worried, even with the pop and then the swelling. That was the first time I was like, this pain is familiar.
Yeah.
And then I got the MRI scheduled, and my sister is a sports physiotherapist type thing. She's going to kill me for not getting her title right. and she had a briefly sort of like explored the knee as best she could to test the ligaments and that as well while I was awaiting the MRI. And she said, I think there's more than just that one that's gone there, actually.
Right.
So that sort of worried us.
Yeah.
And then after I got the scan done, and then the day before the Riptide show. So I'd already informed Riptide, I think the ACL's gone. I think I'm going to be out for a little while, actually.
Yeah.
But if it's just the ACL, I'll do that one match with Spike.
Yeah.
If it's just that, I'll tape it up, I'll strap it, I'll do everything I can, and then I'd get that one.
Because that's what was extra heartbreaking, was the timing of it all. And again, we'll go into all of this, but Riptide was an organisation that was really on the up, and you were one of the key people on the up, and you'd, in your helping them be on the up, you'd got to main event level kind of thing. And it was a big moment, and it was weird because, as you said, it all played out in real time. I saw you tweeting saying, I've got the scan today.
Yeah.
I'll be there tomorrow, one way or another. And it's that kind of the blurring of reality and storyline, because you're like, even when you came out, me and B were sat there, and B was like, is he serious? Is this real? Yeah. Or is it? I was like, no, I'm pretty sure, from the emotion of everyone, it's real. But yeah, so
yeah,
it was right. It was reality at that point, because you're letting people know, look, it's a good chance I'm not going to be able to do what? Because again, that's just responsible, because people have paid, do you know what I mean? They're paying customers, all that kind of, you're like, right, here's what's going on. I'll be there, but I don't know yet.
They made a point, because I'd let them know however far in advance that I think through June. So May 25th was when the injury happened, and then the show wasn't until the 5th of July.
Right.
So I'd let them know as early as late May, there's a bit of an issue here, but once I get the ins and outs of it, I reckon I could get that one, and then I'd need time for the surgery and what have.
Yeah.
And then getting the results from the surgery, they said it's not just the ACL that's gone, it's the PCL, it's the MCL, and it's all your cartilage in your knee.
Wow.
That is the sort of thing that, even after the surgery, if you want to be walking in your 50s, you can't really do this anymore.
Yeah.
So that was really, really tough to take. But
yeah, I can imagine.
I didn't. Yeah, it was just a numb. It was just a numbness.
Yeah.
I was going to say feel numb, but I was listening to your songs earlier, and I was like, you're right. That is a paradox.
Yeah.
It was just overwhelmed with a numbness. But at least I knew I had to look at the show. I contacted Riptide, I explained everything to them. They said, don't worry, we want to give you this platform to explain it to people.
Yeah.
And I was very, very grateful of that, actually, to be able to address that publicly, particularly at a place like Riptide, which was home for me, very much so home.
Or it very much felt like you, Mambo, TK, Spike, were all people I'd seen at Progress and around. And when I saw you at, and Candy Floss I'd thrown there as well, when I saw you at Riptide, I was like, oh, they're different here. I mean, it's like they've got that room. And again, it's another thing that we'll get into. It's what I think is the beauty of NXT UK and all these other things of pulling people up, it gives other people room to flourish. And it felt like that was Riptide was made. And I know TK will insist it was him alone, but was made by on you, Chuck, TK, Spike, these kind of characters, and Kara, and who were really, yeah, the lifeblood of that.
It was a really interesting and smart model that Riptide had, because I remember the first, so me versus Spike was their first ever match.
Right.
And I remember speaking with the promoters at the time that they were starting up and going, I think you should use me. I'm the LGBT guy.
Yeah.
This show is running in Brighton. If I can't get over here, I'll probably just quit, actually.
Yeah. And who better to be against than the right-wing Tory kind of character of Spike?
We were both so in on this story because it was such overt oppositional factors.
And as you say, location-wise, there's no one who will be hated easier in that location and no one who will be loved easier.
It was perfect because we just came out there, we had a match, but the environment and the connection that we both had was so visceral.
Yeah.
And it was just, two pillars of opposite sides of the spectrum with it.
Yeah.
And the Riptide original model was, we're going to have these superstars. So I think it was Ospreay and Shane Strickland that closed that show. And then their second show, they had BSS and Colt Cabana and Candice LeRae and Joey Ryan. And then Matt Riddle and Keith Lee and that. So their model was, we get people in the door with the stars, and then all the while, we're going to slowly build this Spike and Sexsmith thing.
Yeah.
And then through quality work and just improving as a talent, Mambo started getting some real momentum with the fan base.
Yeah.
And we spoke about how we could involve Mambo in our story to a point.
Yeah.
And then by the end of that first, second year, Riptide suddenly had no real need to bring in these superstar brand names because they'd built three people as a minimum, with Candy Floss and TK coming up as well.
Yeah.
That would sell out shows on their names alone.
I love it because it's, and again, I keep saying we're going to talk about it, but there's so much. Everyone knows that anytime there's wrestling on the podcast, I'm happy to talk for hours and hours. But it's the work that Progress and ICW and people like that did of building storylines into a product that wasn't on TV, so therefore you'd imagine it's hard to build a storyline. I love that that's birthed things like Riptide that from its conception can say, right, here's what we're going to do. This is a storyline that we're going to build from day one, and here's how we're going to plan it. We're going to have these names to bring them in. It's a beautiful thing, and it's worked. Even better that it's worked, because it's like, right, we can do that. It's the thing.
I think the bravery involved in knowing you're going to make a loss on your first few shows as well.
Yeah, and
but to commit to the product and know that we're going to build something here and now to flourish is so impressive.
Yeah, I mean, the names you mentioned, Ospreay, Strickland, Joey Ryan, Keith Lee, Riddle, other than Will, who's often at that point would have been in the UK, none of them are UK-based.
No.
So they're names that are command and deserve a decent fee, but we'll also have flights attached to that, hotels attached to that. So it is a big to say, it's saying, you're going to have some, you're going to have to be prepared to lose for a bit.
I think as well, something about Riptide is they go above and beyond to provide for their talent. There's a hairdresser backstage.
Yeah.
There's a full-blown catering set up.
There's a massage person.
All of their local talent.
Look how uncomfortable I am saying the word masseuse. It's like there's a massage person.
The connotations of, if we needed them, they were there. But they went above and beyond to provide for not just their superstars, but everybody that was on a show, because everybody on the show to them was a superstar.
Yeah. Did that influence where you made the announcement then?
That was a big thing. I think that was the place where I'd built my biggest connection other than perhaps Progress.
Yeah.
But I was no longer working for Progress.
That makes sense.
And I don't think it was ever a debate. I was going to do it at Riptide.
Yeah. I mean, again, how How is that moment? Because again, it's such a blur of reality and storyline. It's storyline kind of goes out the window at that point because you're having to pour your heart out and say it's over.
It was a really tough. I don't even really want to call it a promo.
Yeah,
it was just me in a ring with a microphone because as a promo, it's a bad promo. Like there's no inflection, there's no quality to delivery.
Yeah,
I just start rambling.
Yeah.
Really, but able to say my piece.
Yeah. Understandably, it's emotion. It's,
yeah, no.
Know,
but not... the artist in me is looking back and going, it's bad work. You know, it's a bad delivery. Yeah.
Yeah.
I did again. Felt nothing the whole time. I was half expecting to sort of really break down when I was there in the ring. I was half expecting to get back through curtain and break down again or something. But it wasn't until the day after that I allowed myself to read some of the messages and the tweets and stuff like that that had come through.
What was the picture or GIF you posted? Because that had me in bits.
Oh, man, the Doctor Who one.
I don't want to go.
Because that's just in my head.
Man, that was, again, it's the power of social media. And again, the power of promos and work, because that was a perfect tweet. Again, it's weird that Twitter and social media is part of the wrestling industry now.
Yeah, no,
it really can be a key part. So,
if you look at, what's it, Schadenfreude just put on their wild Tuesday Night Graps show the other day, and that just the power of that through social media and the way in which they've marketed that as this wacky standalone entity.
Yeah.
But it's must-see. It's absolutely must-see.
Completely. Or they're doing, I don't even know what, are they calling it Band of Graps?
Or they did a Band of Match. So they'd pause partway through and the fans would vote on Twitter polls or something.
Again, it's amazing.
It's just,
I saw the promo for it. I was like, I don't know what that is or how it works, but I need to know.
Yeah,
I need to
see the Black Mirror parody.
Yeah.
Like, that's the genius of someone like Chris Brooks.
Yeah.
His mind and his ability to, his application of branding is second to none.
Yeah.
Second to none. To have, bless him, Lycos get hurt.
Yeah.
And to see him have to perform in tag matches where he knows he's at his absolute best.
Yeah.
And have to reincarnate that, and with CCK becoming somewhat diluted, that might sound harsher than I wanted to.
That makes sense.
But to then create something like Schadenfreude.
Yeah.
And then have, again, another hottest brand in the game.
Yeah.
Is just testament to how spectacular his mind is.
One of the times I've marked out the most in the last year or so is when Chris on Twitter or somewhere complimented my merch game.
Really?
Because again, good. You know how good they are at it. So it's one of them where it's like, respect is there already. Yeah. So it's like, all right, cool.
Wow,
thanks.
Okay, I'm on the right track.
This is nice.
When I started up the Proud Apparel label, God, every day I was messaging Chris. What do you think of this? How would you go about that? And he was fantastic to me. A lot of time for Chris Brooks.
So you got more emotional when it started to become a reality on Twitter. Again, I think there's a weird thing because within promotions are their own world, essentially. Mm. You can have a storyline in one promotion that isn't in another promotion. Social media is all of them.
Yeah.
So I can completely see how you could have even subconsciously compartmentalized it at the Riptide announcement because it's like, well, it's Riptide. That's its own world.
Yeah,
it's
I only have to happened be this there. Way because this is who I am at this place.
Yeah, you can protect yourself in a way from the emotion of that because I'm at work.
Yeah,
it's own world. But then when it's on social media, it's everyone's world and it's the reality. And the outpouring was huge. I want to give a quick shout out to Charlie Morgan as well because she was it almost the same week or
it
weekend
was,
or something?
No, it was the week before
she had a similar
and I didn't even see it online until after I got my results and then I messaged her and went, me and you are doing nothing for the durability of gaze.
This is
bad, you know.
I
was like, I'm going to step on your toes with a bloody announcement about retiring as well. This doesn't feel fair, this doesn't feel right. But she's another one. She's an amazing girl.
Amazing talent. And again, heartbreaking because she was just starting to get in the NXT UK really young, amazingly athletic. Again, the world at the feet is the perfect description there because it felt like the options are endless with someone like that.
The characterization of Charlie Morgan is stunning.
Yeah.
And then when you tie that in with being an LGBT ambassador,
yeah,
it just took it onto another level. Because she allowed herself to be vulnerable by being the real her.
This is going
to
sound stupid, but looks cool as well.
She looks...
That really helps. What I
mean. She's got this...
Chris Brooks, again, simple example. He looks cool in there.
He just does, doesn't he?
Even if he was rubbish, you'd be like, he looks... Yeah, no, looks, I need to watch this guy. He looks cool.
Yeah, yeah. I want to... Wish fulfillment. So I want to identify with that. Charlie Morgan's depiction of masculinity, and hybrid of masculinity and femininity with her brand is... Brilliant.
Yeah, absolutely fantastic. Yeah. So that's when it all kind of hit you and you had to accept it, I guess. This is going to sound like an odd one, but do you think it helped that so much was wrong injury-wise, if you know what I mean? Like, it wasn't like it was like, oh, is this the end? Is this not? It was like the fact that it's your ACL, it's going through the list. It's like, right, it's not giving me the option of going, oh, maybe I can work through it or maybe I can do this. It's like, no, this is kind of definitive. It took the choice out of your hands in a way.
I know what you mean. I think a part of me was quietly like, the battle's over.
Yeah.
So instead of having to do multiple surgeries or something like that over the course of 2 years and then coming back and then hoping you're still relevant in some way and reinventing from there, that struggle was taken away from me. So maybe the news was cathartic to a point.
Yeah.
But it still really hurts to not be able to do what I love doing.
Yeah, exactly. And again, I was discussing it with John, who's working in the studio here beforehand, because he used to watch a bit of wrestling. He doesn't. And I was just saying it feels like I'm piling in and getting highlighting how hard it is, but it's something that you've worked really hard at for a really long time to have that taken away. And then have to start thinking, right, what can I do now? What is transferable skills? Because, again, it's wrestling. There's not a lot. You're going to have to look hard to find the transferable skills if you want to go elsewhere.
People like promotion in Liverpool called TNT messaged and said, we want you aboard our commentary team.
Yeah.
And I was like, I'll tell you, give me a similar situation. So give me a few weeks, let me process, and then we'll take it from there. I accepted the post, but being able to do an in-ring promo or be able to do a wrestling match, that's not a transferable skill to be able to commentate.
It's a world
not
of
at
difference.
All. Do you see that? How many footballers are actually successful or decent pundits in the end of the day? Not that many.
It's so hit and miss. It was bizarre recently. There was a pile on hate and then of love on Renee Young on her commentary and I couldn't understand it because literally the week before I was talking to my mate saying, I don't remember someone who's adapted to it so quickly. I think she's amazing. I think just from, and again, it's a completely different skill of being the backstage interviewer to commentating on matches. And I think she's been amazing, but it's not an easy thing.
What was her statement as well? She's like, I'm literally learning on the job and the biggest platform in the industry.
Yeah.
Very few people get to do that.
That current booth, Corey, and Cole, it's my favourite in ages, and it's kind of turned me on the because it was cool to hate Cole for a long time, because he wasn't JR or he wasn't this or he wasn't that. But that booth, they just rib each other constantly, and it's so entertaining to me, even when potentially the product in ring isn't necessarily to my tastes a lot of the time. They save a lot of that for me because they're just having a right old dick about it.
I think it's like a podcast though.
Yeah.
Like if the subject matter isn't great, you can feel the energy of the interaction between the two.
Completely.
It doesn't matter.
Hearing which one of them is holding in laughter is constantly entertaining. And it'll be all three. They'll vary. Yeah.
When was it Graves says the small package thing after Spud's sex skit. And you just see Renee have to turn away and she's like, you three are just enjoying yourselves out there, aren't you?
And that's beautiful to see. But also it's beautiful to see that although it's not a given, these things are transferable and movable. Corey himself was an in-ring guy.
Someone I'm looking at the minute and just sort of going...
He was an in-ring guy that didn't have the look or style of any commentators that have come before him. So it's not this easy... like the example I always think of is Chael Sonnen in the UFC.
Yeah.
You always see him go, he could go on to commentary easy. He's such a good talker. It makes sense. He's smart. It'll all work. Whereas Corey was someone you'd, if you were looking at him back then, you go, well, I don't particularly see him as a commentator. That seems bizarre.
I don't even remember any of his promos or anything like that.
No. Nothing before. But again, he's shown that there are these options if it's if it's right, if it's at the right time. So let's, before we get on to what's ahead, I guess, let's rewind all the way back to kind of the start of the journey. And as a kid, like, were you always into wrestling? Was wrestling always something you enjoyed? Was it something you found later on? Or?
It's probably around about like 8, 9-ish. I saw a match once, which was, I think it was, my dad had Sky Sports. My mum and dad separated. But when you went to dad's, he had Sky Sports, so you didn't really care that you weren't with mum. I remember just being up, unable to sleep one night, and then just seeing Road Dogg.
Yeah.
Road Dogg was never super athletic, but he was just beating someone up. But it looked so fun.
Yeah.
And I was like, I don't know what this is. I don't know whether this is a real fight or what. I'm a child.
Yeah.
But I knew I liked it.
Yeah.
I didn't really like fall in love with it immediately. I don't think I really paid it too much attention after that. I was just like, oh, yeah, that's like the, yeah, that sort of circus act thing. Anyway, a few years later, in the build-up to WrestleMania 17, I got well into it.
Right.
Real into it.
And who was at the forefront then? Who was...
So, it would have been... Angle had the belt, and I despised him.
Yeah.
I was just like, who is this whingy little prick? Oh, God, he keeps finding a way to win.
Yeah.
And he's quite good, so so why is he undercutting... Oh, it was perfect. And then you had someone like The Rock.
Yeah.
And then Austin came back.
Yeah.
And I was like, I don't know who this is at first. And then I went and watched some older stuff and I went, oh, he seems brilliant.
And it's one of them things as well that the shorthand in wrestling is amazing. Like, you don't need to know who Austin is. As soon as that glass breaks and you see the crowd react, mate, you can't help but absorb just that excitement. Going,
yeah, he come back and then that happened at the Survivor Series pay-per-view of that year and just went, wow, he's a big deal, isn't he?
yeah. And again, it is one of them things that the more you get into it, the more you learn about it, the more enjoyment you get out of it. I feel that with mixed martial arts as well. I feel the more you understand the ground game, the stand-up, the submission game, the more you're getting enjoyment out of every moment.
Yeah.
And wrestling couldn't be a better example of that. I've told this story a few times, but it cracked me up because it was a real eye-opener. An MMA journalist I follow on Twitter... Her son is becoming a big wrestling fan. So she's watching a few events with him and tweeting live. And she tuned into the Royal Rumble, which is probably my favourite event of the year every year. I adore it.
It's just the best, isn't it?
But she pointed out, because she doesn't know who any of these people are, most of the Royal Rumble is just counting.
Yeah,
because if you don't get the payoff excitement of when it's revealed who's coming out, if she's just like, it's another person, it's like, and then... 2 minutes later, all of us are counting again.
Yeah.
So it's like an hour of counting.
That's amazing.
That's ridiculous. Yeah. I hadn't thought of that at all.
That's fantastic.
It's complete. Because the in-ring in Rumbles generally isn't that amazing for a lot of it, but then there's a lot of counting. Anyway, so that was, I mean, that's the kind of, it's the much romanticised attitude era that dragged you in. And what better time, right? The richest characters, the most boundary pushing, for better or worse.
I think the first pay-per-view I ever got on, like, it would have been VHS at the time, was the Hell in a Cell Armageddon.
Right.
With the six of them.
Yeah, wow.
And just, like, you see, the undercard was still great, but it was relatively depleted because they put their six big guns in this one match.
Yeah.
But then that match had, like, was it Taker, Angle, Rock, Austin, Triple H and Rikishi?
Yeah.
Who are they? Like, I was just so in. And then the next show after that, I think, was the Rumble. And that Rumble just was the best Rumble I can remember.
Yeah.
That one, where Austin takes it at the end.
Yeah.
And then you build to Rock Austin at Mania. It's just, wow.
That's a hell of a station to get on the train at.
I know,
you know what I mean?
I know.
You're really straight in at this
The build to Mania 17.
Yeah.
Yeah, man. I did
all
right.
That's amazing. There. So also, the good thing there is you were at a period where they were experimenting a lot with characters, with pushing boundaries, with what they could do. And that, again, that feels like a good point to come in because you're seeing people like, I mean, I guess that's the end of that main Shawn Michaels era. But I think he's been one of the most fascinating characters, from going from being a bit of a jock to being almost asexual to being in antagonistically sexual in every way. Yeah, yeah. And it felt like he could go anywhere with stuff. And that kind of is obviously, I'm dancing around that because one of the reasons I felt this was an important podcast is not to blow smoke up your ass, but I think the impact on independent wrestling and many other things, as Jack Sexsmith, the pansexual phenomenon that you have had and will continue to have, is huge. I genuinely think it's huge, and there's sprinklings of those things in that era of wrestling. Do you know what I mean? It may not have been at the forefront, but there's people who are, as I said, Gold Dust, who's confusing the lines of his sexuality and whatever else. And again, sometimes that was played incorrectly, and that was played, heels were playing against it with homophobia or whatever else.
But the amount of times I've been told, I bet you look back at like the way that Goldust was shown and you get really angry. I bet you look back at Billy and Chuck and you get really, really angry. And I go, absolutely not.
No.
Because that was then.
Yeah.
And we don't get to now without recognising that then is wrong.
Yeah.
And we use it.
Completely.
We use it. I was watching that as a kid and I was enjoying it.
Yeah.
Particularly someone like Goldust, because I was there going, he's a bit like what I am, but I'm not really realising yet. Something about this guy that's really connecting with me, and this is weird.
Yeah.
You know, and I didn't care if we're getting cheered or booed. I was just happy they was there.
Yeah, I think at points with all of them, they did some really good stuff. Mm. But then there was also points where they did some really ignorant and simplistic and oversimplification.
What was the one on Raw? They had the hot lesbian action interludes and stuff like that.
Yeah.
I look at that and just, oh, God. Yeah, thank God that happened then, so that we can have now is the mindset I choose to have about those things.
Yeah, completely. And again, it's also good to, a lot of people moan about the Legends coming back type moments and segments, but as we're recording this, I mean, this will come out in a month or so, but as we're recording this, we've just had SummerSlam, and it was great that Trish Stratus came back and reminded people that, oh no, I was a really good wrestler. I'm not some old, here's a legend back. It's like, I was doing it when they were having hot lesbian action segments. And I was actually going in there and having to wrestle and prove myself. So
closing shows with Lita and that. They were, it's nice. It is nice to reflect upon that type of stuff, because I think we're at the peak era for mainstream women's wrestling.
Yeah.
It's fair to say. But then you did have your Molly Hollies and your Ivories, who were incredible back in the day, who just had to make do with your Tori Wilson and Dawn Marie segments because that was selling to their audience.
Yeah, and as simple and wrestling as it may sound, you've got to have something to overcome. That's what makes the women's movement at the moment a massive achievement, because it was shit once. Yeah. That's what makes it great. You need to have a heel for the baby face to overthrow for it to be exciting.
And I think
I know that sounds simplistic, because again, there was some shit stuff there that's damaging socially and on TV and things like that, but still it's you couldn't have where we are now without that.
Exactly. And that's the mindset I choose to have, is that they made mistakes and they got stuff wrong and they did stuff that wouldn't fly now, but if you look at where we're at, perhaps it was worth it to a point.
Yeah, completely. So what was your route into, from going, oh, this is quite cool, to going, I want to do that? Because it's weird, particularly at that era in the UK, it's not like you're going into the school careers counsellor and he's going, I've checked all the boxes. I think professional wrestler. I think maybe you should do that.
So I think I got it to like 18 and went, oh, fuck, I haven't grown out of this.
Yeah.
and then continued to watch it with two of my better mates. I went off to uni and I'd come back every pay-per-view.
Yeah.
And it was, I think it was around about pipe bomb time as well, or something as well. And I was like, yeah, we're in. We are in.
Yeah.
I was a devout Christian during my late teens.
Okay.
Because I wasn't really willing to sort of look at my sexuality and be that person yet. And I was looking for meaning, and religion, for right or wrong, gives you closure to a point.
And puts the, or gives you reason to not address things you might not have been ready to address.
Very
at that
much
point.
So.
It's one of the ugliest things about religion, I think, is that it comfortably puts things in a box and says, no, that's good. No,
it's yes or no. In many ways with religion. But I think I was angsty teenager trying to find the meaning of life, and everyone goes, you know what, there might not be a meaning to life, except for religion, that went, well, this is the meaning. So I went with the conclusive answers.
Yeah.
And I got so into it, like I was teaching it in secondary schools.
Wow.
Yeah, it was a big, big part of who I was. And then I went off to, for a gap year, I used to teach it, man. Thinking about that now is wild.
That's mad.
And I was seeing someone at the time, and then went off to university, and it was my second year of university that I separated with that person and realised that despite throwing myself into religion, I didn't know how much I could justify the truths it perpetuates anymore.
Yeah.
And ultimately, it wasn't making me happy.
Yeah.
Because I was just saying no to this voice in my head the whole time.
It's a tough one, man, because a lot of people assume that I hate religion because of certain songs I've done and things like that. It's like, it's not as simple as that. I think religion can be absolutely amazing, and I think it's responsible for some of the greatest progressions in human history and some of the greatest changes in societal views. But again, it's comparable to wrestling. It's also responsible for some of the worst bits taken to an extreme. Anything taken to an extreme tends to not be great, you know?
Yeah. So I was into that. And then I separated from this girl I was seeing at the time. And I had this sort of like an epiphany moment of sorts. It wasn't like a realization. It was just a decision I made to go, you will be active in the things you are passionate about from now.
Wicked.
It was real cathartic, actually. So I went, I'm going to stop doing the church thing because you know you're not passionate about that, and you're going to embrace this side of yourself.
Yeah.
So I started going to bars and exploring my sexuality in that way. And I signed up to a football team, and I started a radio comedy show at university.
Amazing.
And I was just choosing to be fearless choosing to be fearless and happy to fail.
Yeah.
And with that also, I started training as a wrestler.
Amazing.
It didn't last a massive amount of time because that was when my first knee injury went.
Right.
This was training at a school in Edmonton run by Justin Richards, who's a former FWA champ. That's how long ago. But I met a friend of mine called Sebastian at that school.
Yeah.
Goes by Sebastian.
Yeah.
He's hilarious.
I would say he's one of the greatest losses to wrestling.
I
think he's amazing.
I think he's, oh man, very few people generate a reaction as visceral as he does, as he did.
Yeah.
I thought he was sensational.
I remember the first progress shows that we'd go to, me and my mate Chris were like, this guy is the best because everyone despises him. And it's that weird thing of growing up in Essex, but being a little punk or metal kid, I've been at the places that I recognise all the wrestling fans from. But in Essex, I've also been at college or wherever with the people that Sebastian was representing. Yeah. And I know that they're the sworn enemies as such.
Yeah. Nah,
and the trendies and the.
It was perfect because that was the progress crowd at the time as well. It was these, was your sort of 20, 30 somethings, nostalgia vibing punks. Basically, and he just came out as the antithesis of that, and went, "Yeah, this makes me better than you."
And lived it on online as well, which was the key part.
The best on social media when he was working.
Yeah,
the best, the most antagonistic. His gig was, his act was probably just a troll.
Yeah,
just a jock style, better off troll.
Yeah,
and it was sensational. And we were the only two people who were particularly tight from that school. After the fact that we're still doing it, with the exception of Wolfgang Alexander. He was another one who was spectacular. He did largely family shows until he had a family himself. But he's spectacular.
Yeah.
There's your shout out, Wolfie.
Yeah. Still, again, it goes back to the ability or the importance of social media online is when Sebastian got injured at Brixton.
Yeah.
Was knocked unconscious and was wheeled out on a stretcher. Number one, he stuck his middle fingers up as he went, which is just consummate pro.
Yeah.
But just the tweet that came after that was just so beautiful, because it's like, I thought I died. You know, there was a bright light and I saw rows and rows of virgins, and then I realised I was just at a progress show. It's so good. It's like I thought I'd gone to heaven.
He's the best.
Perfect.
So I met him there, and then I did my ACL for the first time and went away. Never really thought I'd come back.
Yeah.
And then friends with him online.
Yeah.
And then I see him however many years later, must have been late 2014, I think. This match graphic popped up of him versus Zack Sabre Jr.
Wow.
Who was one of my favourites ever.
Yeah.
Is one of my favourites ever.
Yeah.
And I was just straight in the DMs. How the fuck have you done this? You were never good. How has this happened? And he was like, mate, come along. There's this school in Brixton, or Stockwell at the time, called the Projo, for a promotion called Progress. They're interested in developing new talent, and they're giving opportunities to us in this show called Endeavour.
Yeah.
And it will be bigger crowds than you ever worked when you were first started, even on this developmental show. So that January of 2015, I was like, yeah, go on then. I think I had another sort of one of those moments of like, you haven't been active enough in the things you're passionate about.
Yeah.
So let's try this again, because you always love
this. It's easy to start. It's easy to have an idea like that and start. It's a lot harder to then live that.
So reflecting and being positive with that reflection, because the amount of times you look back and you just get down is commonplace.
Yeah.
But if you can look back and then go, right, that's my motivator. And then that popped up and I went, yeah, go on then. If he's bloody getting them chances, I've got half a chance as well. And I went to my first training session at the Projo and met a man by the name of Edward Dennis.
Yeah.
And he sort of took to me.
Previous Distraction Pieces guest.
Yeah.
I've had Eddie on.
Very articulate man. Very smart man. And he sort of saw a little bit of something in me, because I had a few sort of foundations established from my time training before.
Yeah.
And then within 4 months, I was on the academy shows, the developmental shows, them Endeavour shows. And it was a real tricky one. I remember being in conversation with one of the Progress promoters, John Briley, about what do you want to do with your persona then? Because we've recognised the talent, but what's the act? I think my first thing I said was, Sam Sparks, Sparks Flies, right? And he went, that's fucking awful. And it was, and is.
I mean, the beauty is that, or for better or worse, John will not pull any punches on such things. He will be very open with his positive or negative opinions.
There's never blow smoke, nothing like that. No? Never, we'll think about it. No, that's bad.
Yeah, that's rubbish.
And then it came, and then the second I saw his message, he said, do you got anything else? And Jack Sexsmith came to me like that.
Yeah.
And then, so I said the name because I used to love the OC, the TV show.
Yeah.
And there was a singer in it from their Christmas episode called Ron Sexsmith. And that name always made me laugh.
Yeah.
And I was like, yeah, Sexsmith, but like a bit of a lad. Jack the Lad Sexsmith. Yeah. Yeah, Jack Sexsmith. And he was like, go on. And I went, sexually frivolous, morally ambiguous, just like came to me. And he went, cool, we'll run with that.
Yeah.
And then I had something like 3 days to get gear made for this character that we just invented.
Amazing.
And couldn't get gear made, so I bought a set of luminous yellow banana hammock Calvin Klein's and just went, yeah, I'll be the sex guy then.
Yeah.
And at that point, I wasn't sure whether I would be showing to how much of my sexuality I'd allow myself to show at that time, because it was still a very new experience to me. I was still reintroducing myself and probably more anxious about performing and not shitting the bed than I was about actually making any sort of statements or connecting at the time.
Of course, yeah.
And then we got a few shows in. I think it was after the singles match I had with Eddie Dennis, where I was like, guys, I think I want to really, really embrace the real, more of Ryan through Jack.
Yeah.
And I actually think we could do a lot here. However, as a quartet with the three Progress promoters, we need to make sure we market this as correctly as possible.
That's great foresight to say, look, we need to make this right. And that's again, it's a tough thing with independent wrestling, because you're an independent contractor and therefore you're working at a lot of different places. So it can be hard or you have to be bold to take control of the storyline and the narrative. Mm. It's easy to be slotted in a load of places and you're not really sure how it's coming across. So it's on the individual to go, here's who I am, here's what I want to be, this is what we have to make work. And with a character like that, it's all the more important to have that drive and strictness on, look, we need to get this right.
Yeah.
I think, can't be here's the funny gay guy.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And I think at first, whilst I very much was that, there was a purpose to it because I couldn't hand on heart recall seeing a queer culture protagonist mm-hmm. in professional wrestling anywhere. Mm-hmm. Not someone who truly embraced his sexuality and was loved for it or in spite of it.
Yeah.
So I think that was the mission statement that I set out with Progress at the time. Let's do something different here. Let's do something real.
Yeah.
Let's force a change of sorts. And at the start, because I knew my skill set wasn't in keeping with the talent that was on Progress.
Yeah.
It was at the start, I did lean on comedy. And my mindset to that was to be digestible.
Yeah.
Because we're dealing with 800 people most of the time at Progress shows, some of which may not know me. This may be the first time they see me. Some of which may be slightly unsettled by queer culture at the time. But if I can be likable to them,
yep.
and then we get to a position where we've won them over and be endearing, but through being endearing, then we can really start to run with this and do something real.
It's being clever and tactical with it, right? Because again, it's wrestling and you've not got... You're not necessarily always mic'd up or whatever. You've not got TV. So there has to be a level of broad strokes to get these ideas across. Then you can add the beauty of people like, I remember the first person or the first people seeing it live was Pete Dunne and Trent Seven. Just you can add the tiny little nuances. A TK is amazing as well that only a couple of people will see. But for those who see it, it's beautiful.
Yeah, yeah.
But to get that wider story across or character across, you need to have those bigger and broader strokes and you need to ease people into it. It's an issue I discuss this a lot because a lot of people I know are really doing a lot of work to make change of the perception of sex work and mm-hmm. sex workers. And I think they're doing some amazing things. But one of the discussions I often bring up is, using the term sex work, that's still not a term that everyone is aware doesn't mean what is actually full service sex work, or it would be called ignorantly prostitution right. or hookers or whatever
yeah,
else.
Yeah, yeah.
That sex work is a far broader thing and it can be anyone in the industry. Now, the problem there is if you're using the shorthand of sex work for all your causes, then mm-hmm. the people who are ignorant to it aren't going to have learnt that. So they're just going to think that you're pushing for the rights of full service sex workers, which is valid, but you're pushing for everyone. So it then becomes this blurred, muddied water at times when you're trying to do something positive. So I completely understand that you have to go, right, let's do this in stages.
Yeah.
I need them to like a gay person.
Yeah.
That's my first target. That's as simple as that. I need to be lovable, enjoyable. If I make them laugh, if I make them cry, whatever else. Once they like me, I can then push their emotional investment and really explore the depths of that character, the depths of how far I can take the audience. And dear God, did they embrace you? That must have been an amazing thing when that started to click, because
that was
they adored Jack.
We got them there, man. And I'm really proud to be able to say that we worked collectively to get to that point. The one that really won it over was me and TK a tete-a-tete, if you will. He was being valeted and vice versa by Dahlia Black.
Yeah.
And we were in a couple.
That was quite a nice reverse, because more often than not, he was the valet. Yeah, that was quite a nice flip of the system anyway.
What I really liked about that was the dynamic of, she'd compete in a match and as the antagonist wouldn't be good enough, but would always win because at the end, TK would come in and knock the other girl out and then scarp her off.
Yeah.
And at the time, Progress didn't really have any ideas for myself and TK. And I said, if you're going to run something, let's set something up with me and him.
Yeah.
Because no one's going to be more outraged than a Jack Sexsmith type.
Yeah, yeah.
At these
yeah,
sort
yeah,
of actions.
Yeah.
And I remember work. I remember us chatting because we had our first one of our first progress chapter shows.
Yeah.
Was me versus him in the singles.
Yeah.
And this was two relative unknowns. And I remember seeing it go up on the Progress Wrestling fan group page and the amount of people that said, well, that'll be my piss break then.
Right.
And just went, oh, we're going to get them, mate. We're going to absolutely get them. This is a start of something. This is a start of something. We were just so energized for it.
Yeah.
We didn't know how far it would go or what we'd get put in moving forward. But after our first match, which I was really happy with, particularly at the time, Trav had aligned with TK.
Yeah.
And that was the birth of the South Pacific Power Trip.
Yeah.
The next show, I had a battle rap with Roy Johnson, which honestly, rapping in a wrestling context is my favourite thing I've ever done.
Yeah.
It really is. It shouldn't be.
The Waistman challenges were always so good. And again, it's that thing of, I always love what Regal told Smallman that, wrestling's a circus. You mm-hmm. need your high flyers, you need your strong men, you need your clowns. You should have a mixture of that. People could say, why is a bloke just coming down and having battle raps with people in a key slot, in a really good slot? Because it did. It climbed up the card as well. It was amazing. But it's the variation.
Yeah.
That's what makes it great. If you watch eight acoustic singer-songwriters in a row, you can't tell who's good after the fourth.
Yeah.
It's like, it's another one. That could be Adele. That could be anyone. Yeah, it's another acoustic singer-songwriter. So you need that variation to appreciate it.
Definitely. I've always been a champion of variety on a wrestling show.
Yeah.
100%.
Yeah.
100%. Yeah.
So how was that when you started to get the crowd on board? And really on board? Like, there was... Because, again, the beauty of social media is it becomes individuals as well. So you had people who would really vehemently support Jack as a character.
Yeah.
I always remember Penny Gotch as a supporter of Jack, but also I equally remember as Sebastian just being brutal to, like,
savage.
Again, I was reveling in it because it's just, it's the beauty of the art of it. When Paul Robinson has people genuinely wanting to get in the ring and fight him.
Yeah.
It's beautiful to me. It's a work of art because he's worked. He's playing his role.
He is forced, and no one goes into that building thinking they're going to see real fights, for want of a better way of saying that.
Yeah.
Paul Robinson is able to make you suspend your disbelief so much that you want to climb in there and give it a go.
Yeah.
But then realize, actually, this 5'4" madman would probably kill me.
That's how
incredibly good at his job he is.
Yeah. It's
sensational. And it's that raw, visceral, real emotion that was always my drive. I was never about the exhibition, all action bouts, in truth.
Yeah.
I didn't want to be some lead role in a Michael Bay film. I wanted to be John McClane. I wanted to show that vulnerability. I want to be loved without having to do a massive amount.
Considering Progress were embracing you quite early on and were one of the biggest companies in the country at the time, you clicked with those guys and they gave you, you worked well together because the kind of ongoing story of you being the underdog, kind of fighting to get that win over Zach Gibson, over whoever else, and always each time showing that progression and showing that you are worthy but continually falling short. That was a hell of a bit of storytelling over like however many months. That was to get the opportunity at a big company like that to tell a story like that over these months, that it's not just, because again, people have to lose so often. If you're someone who's losing regularly, you're kind of enhancement talent or a job or whatever else. So to get to provide the benefit of being the person that people can come and beat, but actually make that a storyline and make a, build yourself in loss. That's a dream, right?
That was always something in the back of my head was, I don't want to win until it matters.
Yeah.
And we make it matter through defeat.
Yeah.
And I felt I was different to other wrestlers with that mindset, perhaps.
Yeah.
Of just going, I'm going to let the vulnerability reign supreme.
Yeah.
I was getting standing ovations in defeat.
Yeah, completely.
At the time, which was Yeah, I made a T-shirt about that eventually.
Yeah, I loved it.
That's, yeah, cry, standing ovation, leave.
Yeah, yeah, it's beautiful. And again, it comes straight back to what we were saying about the more you pay attention, the more you can get out of any of these things. I remember as a kid hating Ric Flair, and as a grown-up going, oh my God, there's a reason he was the best in the world, because he would come to your territory, make your main guy look $1 million because he'll take a beating all day, cheat to win so he gets to keep hold of the belt, and leave. It's like, that's far better than having a Hulk Hogan come in or whomever come in, beat the crap out of your main guy and leave.
Yeah.
It's like, you get that that was the masterfulness of a character like Flair, and Shawn Michaels as well, someone who can sell for days, can make his opponent look amazing by taking a beating like no other. And that's kind of, it's often overlooked, particularly in the indie world of who could do the best moves, who can become a GIF easiest kind of thing, you know.
But then it went back to variety then.
Yeah.
Because I knew I could provide something on a card that no one else was able to do at the time.
Yeah.
And that story building into Strong Style was great for me. So going back to TK and the South Pacific Power Trip, it became relatively apparent that that me and Roy Johnson were enhancement for them.
Yeah.
So I think collectively I faced off against them at least 4 times and lost 4 times.
Yeah.
But the last bout we only got because another tag team who the South Pacific Power Trip was set to face were injured.
Yeah.
And then they gave us this opportunity to have the last installment of our feud. And it was a tables match.
Yes.
It had been voted in by the fans as a tables match. And it meant we got to close the half, which is arguably the best spot on a wrestling show.
Yeah.
Because nobody's burnt out yet, nobody's too drunk yet, nobody's too tired yet. We can have them at their absolute peak. We can go all out, and then they reset again at the start of the second half.
Yeah, exactly. You get to be the blowout at
that
point.
So we got to have the chance to have a real, real big match. And the only reason we had that spot is because it was a tables match and they had to tidy up afterwards.
Yeah.
But that match went so well that even in another defeat, myself and Roy developed momentum that Progress never expected of us.
Yeah.
And Jim come up to us after the show and he said, we've got this idea for a singles run. And if it goes well, we want to get you into Super Strong Style.
Amazing.
I was like, cool.
Okay.
And I knew I had Zach Gibson for my first match on this venture.
Yeah.
So I think I went into a brief thing with Sebastian, which I adored, just to make me look more credible before we got to the narrative, where I got a pin on him in a Thunder Bastard match, which is an elimination multi-man match.
Yeah.
And he's just spectacular at just... He'd hit me up online and say something horrible to me in a tweet, and then he'd DM me going, I left you an in there.
Yeah.
And find it, and I'll let you have it. And he would just be great. So I'd see it, and I'd go, I think it was this one, and I'd tweet it, and then he'd show us. He'd be like, oh, my God, how could you? Like, talk about bringing a gun to a knife. Oh, wow. Like,
brilliant.
He was spectacular at allowing you to look good if he was working with you online.
Yeah.
And in a ring.
I mean, if he's not, he will happily destroy any wrestler and make them look absolute. It's one of my favourite things when I come back to Twitter and there's been...
A Sebastian
mate, kind of... He's buried people.
It's that. And that's how I knew as well.
And that's wrestlers, fans, promoters, anyone.
Two of my favourite people in wrestling are TK and Sebastian.
Yeah.
And they're both dickheads.
Yeah.
But because we get on well, they want to work.
Yeah.
And they're willing to show ass for their baby face,
yeah.
Which not everyone is sometimes.
Yeah.
Not everyone is. So I knew I had Zach Gibson as the first rung of this narrative.
Yeah.
And I knew I had him eventually, if things went well, in the first round of Super Strong Style.
Yeah.
And with that information, we choreographed an ending where I would endure the first ever count out loss in Progress history for a singles match, at the very least. I believe they've only just done that again semi-recently.
Yeah.
So that was like something quite cool that I wanted
definitely.
To do. And we centered it around his big finishing move at the time, the Helter Skelter, because he had his submission, Shankly Gates, but he's got this Helter Skelter, which is a twisting vertical suplex.
Yeah.
And I said, just hit me with that on the floor and I won't be able to physically get back in the ring in time. And that's enough for me to show I've tried to compete with you as a technician. I haven't been good enough. I've endured your beating and I've shown fight and fire, but your quality reigns supreme when you have to take it to this level and I haven't got enough.
Yeah.
Because when we come to the match at Strong Style, you'll do it again and I will have enough. So even if us not knowing the result of that match at Strong Style at the time, even then, I've still overcome something. I had that in the bank for me, come what may.
I love it. And again, there's some beauty there as well, because people will shit on certain outcomes and certain scenarios sometimes and forget that there's always a place for them.
Mm.
A count out used correctly is amazing. A draw, like when in AEW recently, when Darby and Cody had that draw.
Brilliantly executed.
In general, you say a draw, it's 50-50 book and it's trying not to damage anyone, it's rubbish. That was beautiful. That situation, they did it perfectly. We don't want anyone to lose. So they did it well. And again, it's the same with a count out in a situation like this. It's not saying, oh, we don't want to give the pin or we don't want to do this or that. It's going, no, this is building to, as you said, the beauty of not knowing what the result will be in the next match. You already know that you've got something to overcome.
Yeah.
You've set yourself a bar to go, here's what I couldn't get past last time. Mm. Now, if I get past that,
It's
win-win.
Yeah. I'd already set that up, man.
Yeah.
That was beautiful. I had that in mind. And I was chuffed that my matches where I was trying to show progression building into that had gone really, really well.
Yeah.
And I had a really nice match with Travis Banks at the ballroom that Trav was just starting out in this babyface run and he'd go on to win that Super Strong Style tournament that year. And the business by the end of that match was that Jack Sexsmith would look like a credible opponent and that Travis Banks would be a full-blown babyface. And then come the end of that match, we'd achieved that business and we were so happy.
Yeah.
So happy. And then I had my qualifier to get into Super Strong Style 16 and Paul Robinson, who, as I say, is active now and is the best thing possibly in the world right now.
His promo at that last...
I've got an issue with that. I find that really interesting.
Okay. We'll get into that.
We'll get into that one. Yeah. He handpicked me to be his last match because he knew he wasn't well and had to go away for a while.
Right.
He said, I will put him over in my last match.
Yeah.
And that is arguably the best compliment I've ever had in wrestling.
It's beautiful, right? Knowing that he's the most hateable heel. It's like, well, this is who I need to put over. This is a star maker.
And that's what he wanted to do. He wanted to do something in what he thought would be his last match.
Yeah.
And wow, just wow. I was so humbled by that.
Yeah.
So humbled.
You've been listening to Scroobius Pip's Distraction Pieces.
There we go. That was part one. Hope you enjoyed it. I'm sure you did. Part two, you're definitely going to want to listen to because there's some scandal. There's some surprising information revealed that I didn't know. And I mean, there's some discussion in part two, as you will hear, that me and Jack don't 100% agree on, but it's... I'm swearing. I love Jack. I think he's great, and that's why I felt comfortable saying I don't really agree with that. And we discussed it because we're reasonable people. A lot of people who are listening, who are part of the Brit Wrestling Twitter community, may be shocked at the comfortableness of people agreeing to disagree or being comfortable disagreeing. But yeah, let's get into part two. So. Yeah, part two will be out at midday. If it's already gone midday, it's out now. So go and have a listen. I'll see you then.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.